Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Front Three. It's fair to say the best football podcast in the world. Prove me wrong.
Prove me wrong, children.
I'm Adam Bowen. We've got the one and only Lawrence McKenna with
me. Hey, how you doing?
And we've also got Dave O'Brien.
Hello, hi guys.
Dave joining us from a shed.
No, the sound quality is much improved.
We do, yeah. Fingers crossed. We want to apologise about that. Yeah.
So there is so much to talk about this week. We've got a look at the UEFA Champions League semi-finals. We're doing a little bit of transfer news. We're going to be talking new kits.
I got a new kit in the mail today. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to be opening it so live on the podcast.
Stay tuned is what I can say. So we're coming to you on a Friday this week. So we could talk about all the Champions League action, of course. Yeah. From next week, we're going to be back to the planned schedule with episodes going out on Wednesday. So
never
going to
happen.
Check the event if you're listening via SoundCloud and count the days if you're subscribed on iTunes. Again, I have to say as well, as I do every week, thank you very much for listening to The Front Three. We've had a lot of listens, downloads, questions sent in, people saying nice things on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, it's great.
I don't see any of those.
It's been nice.
I see the nice things. Do you see the nice things, Mike?
I see lots of nice things.
Yeah.
All I see nice it would be things. So much better if you weren't on it, Lawrence.
So we do appreciate all your comments and suggestions and nice things you say to us. So if you do want to send any more of that our way, tweet us at The Front Three with the number three, not the word three, and you're golden. So, without further ado, let's kick off with UEFA Champions League semi-final chat.
It's a party night for the old lady of Italian football. 9 years after they were relegated from the top division in disgrace, Juventus are in the Champions League final.
The most recent game, of course, was Real Madrid-Juventus. Juventus going through to the final for the first time since 2003, where they're going to face Barcelona. Alvaro Morata was the man who scored the goal that knocked out his former club.
Didn't celebrate.
Did a classic non-celebrate celebration.
I would have given it the biggie, to be quite honest.
Would you?
Yeah. Oh, massive, absolutely, around the pitch twice.
But the thing is, imagine if he had celebrated, and then imagine if Real had gone down the other end and scored. Then you look like a dick.
Yeah, it does.
Because he's like, I've done it.
Then he steps up on the 120th minute and scores the winner.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing, isn't it? I guess you have to have that self-confidence, but it also kind of, there's a humility around.
What do you think they're deserving finalists then, Lawrence?
Yeah, I think since I read an article previewing the game when it was originally Real versus Juve, and the idea was that Juve are a thinking team, and that instantly drew me towards them, made me think I like this side, and it made me like Allegri more as well. And I think Dave agrees. I mean, I've loved how adaptable they are. I've loved the fact they've evolved through the season, which has been quite nice as well, which is something that maybe Barcelona have done but in a different way. And then you think, well, you know what, yeah, Juve have gone a different route to the final. It's not the route that Barcelona have gone. They've gone a sort of quite an obscure route, played some quite obscure teams. They've not played all the champions of Europe this season like Barcelona have, but they've certainly earned their way to the final. People wouldn't call it the hardest route though, would they, Dave?
No, 100%. I think obviously Real Madrid has probably been their hardest tie of the current Champions League.
And they came second to Atletico in their group, which is arguably the only other hardest game they've had, really. I mean, they played Monaco,
which obviously isn't the easiest tie to win in. But yeah, what I like about Juve is the formation is just brilliant. I love how it interchanges between sort of a diamond in midfield and then it switches to a flat four in defence. It's brilliant, you know, with Vidal like pressing in front of the midfield with Pirlo sitting in behind. But I've got to say, Real Madrid, sort of, you know, they've caused their own problems this season with selling Xabi Alonso, with not having any balance in midfield. You know, they played two attacking midfields at central midfield yesterday, James and Isco. You could potentially say three with Toni Kroos as well, and it's crazy stuff. The amount of times that you had Juve breaking on sort of 3v3 versus Real Madrid, and then sometimes that had become three defenders versus five Juve attackers. It was crazy, crazy stuff. You've got to credit Ramos before, obviously, that silly, silly foul on the side for stepping out of defence, for cleaning up, for sort of becoming a bit of a defensive midfielder in that way, joining the midfield. But obviously, I think Juventus are a top for, you know, for the final. It's going to be a brilliant tactical battle.
Yeah, it's quite different, isn't it? I mean, we obviously haven't spoken about Barca yet, but I think another thing about that game was that I love the way that Juve use their attackers. They all seem to complement each other so well. Now, and I know that's something that earlier in the season people were questioning. I mean, at the beginning of the season, people were saying, where does Llorente fit? You know, is he almost surplus to requirements in that sense? And I know that with the benefit of hindsight, anyone can say that. But it was difficult to see how Allegri was going to fit this team together. And other people were questioning, first of all, his pedigree, if you like, and second of all, whether he was bringing the team together properly. And I think it shows there's something really great about him, that he's managed to do that through the season. And I know they were champions previous season, but it's difficult to continue that. And he's got the best out of Tevez. He's got the best out of his other strikers.
Morata's the really interesting one as well, isn't he? He's been absolutely fantastic in the Champions League. Obviously, his form in Serie A is okay, but in the Champions League, he's really stepped up with Tevez, a brilliant partnership, you know, between a number nine and a sort of old school partnership, big man, little man. Perfect sub. And I think Vidal gives him a lot of energy in the right areas, and it's just brilliant.
Look at the space that Vidal had last night. I mean, there was a point where he played, I think it was Llorente through, I can't remember.
I think it was Morata.
It was Morata.
The sort of slide, slow ball.
It was like, no. He was meant to play the ball kind of ahead of him, and he played it sort of one side.
Sort of a reverse pass.
Yeah, like a reverse pass. Yeah. And it was just a lovely ball. And you think, if someone like Xabi Alonso was there, he just wouldn't have that space.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you say, they've lacked someone at central midfield to do that. And I know, as attacking as Real Madrid were, because they had enough chances to put that game away, they just didn't put the game away. And it looked too much like the ego of Ronaldo and basically they were making him the go-to man.
What was interesting is Gareth Bale, I thought he had a good second half. First half, he wasn't really in the game. He had a good second half. He registered 7 shots. Ronaldo in the game scored the penalty. That's one of his shots. Mm-hmm. He had a shot from outside the area that was blocked at point. Mm-hmm. And then he had that one shot where he was played through.
Yeah. He also had that chance where he cut back and he could have shot, but he crossed it.
Very, very strange.
It was weird, wasn't
it? He's just not in the game. He was not in the game in the first leg, not in the game in the second leg. You look at the big games against Barcelona, he's been anonymous. Yet Gareth Bale is taking all this flack. I think it's a little bit unfair.
Bale's turned up, to be fair. I mean, but then you'd also say, I mean, you know, if we were to contrast that, Bale did have two chances that he's missed then. Because it wasn't a simple header. Yeah. It was a header he was leaning back for it. And then the other one where he was trying to work it towards goal. And at least he's getting into those positions.
There's chances, It's like, you know, Andy Cole was a player of many chances. That's what Bale had, a lot of chances. He could have changed the game.
So let me ask you this, Dave, right? Do you think, because of the pressure and the expectation at Real Madrid, we didn't hear any booing of Gareth Bale in the Champions League this time?
No.
All we heard was positivity, clapping towards his shots. He had that long shot.
We had some bad stuff after the game, though, apparently, with the Real Madrid fans.
But this is what I'm saying, is that the expectation was that if they encourage him during the game and they get the result, then they get it. And that's their method of encouragement, basically, is if you're doing well on the pitch, we're happy.
Yeah.
But if you're not doing well, then we're 100% against you. And that's what I find interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no method in that madness, because it doesn't work in the long run.
It was a bit I'd say when Real Madrid's play was a bit one-dimensional towards the end, chasing that goal. We've seen it through, you know, I've mentioned it before, fullbacks crossing the ball to their three, you know, strikers, Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo. Obviously, it was Javier Hernandez at the end. But what Di Maria used to give them was another option down the left-hand side, so they could create the overloads, the 2v1s, with Ronaldo still going inside. But now they haven't got that, and it's a little bit, I find Real Madrid a little bit boring and predictable. And
exactly.
Let me ask you this. So sticking on Real Madrid, so it looks like, after that game, it's pretty much curtains for Ancelotti now.
Yeah, I think it was always going to be curtains, no matter what. But
Well, if he'd have won the Champions League, I think
I still think he would have gone.
I think they would have had a job.
It would have been his time to bow out, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So either way, okay, but that might be the last we've seen of him. He's got a 2-game ban now. There's 2 games left, so we might not see him back in the Real Madrid dugout. So not since 1983 has a Madrid manager gone into the summer having won nothing and continued the next season. So you'd pretty much say he is 100% gone. Do you think it speaks to a wider problem with Real Madrid? So basically, trophy this season, last season, okay, European Cup, but that was last year.
Yeah.
They've only won the league once now in 7 years.
Yeah.
They spent over €1 billion. Jose Mourinho is the only man to win La Liga.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think it means for Real Madrid in terms of, okay, the season's over now, what do they do going forward? They get someone like Zidane, who's got absolutely zero experience. Someone like Jurgen Klopp is someone they've been linked with. How do you think they go forward from here? Or can they not, with someone like Florentino Perez in charge, who seems to have it in for every manager? He doesn't trust anyone.
Their politics let him down every time.
Yeah, it's just going to be a one manager in for two seasons, do a little bit, get the players bought for him who he doesn't want, sell the players he doesn't want to sell, another head coach, in, out, shake it all about, you know, get sacked, win a trophy, and that's it, isn't it, really?
But that's, I think that's the sad thing about Real Madrid. I mean, really, we've seen this since they started up the Galactico idea. It's always been a bad capitalist idea of investing in a side. I know every side's based on capitalism, but this is the ultimate in capitalism. It's like it's them almost like engineering through money what they want. And they were the first to do it. Not the first, but they were one of the first to sort of lay it out publicly and be like, right, we're going to invest this and do this. Mm. And effectively, that was because they had their presidents and their presidents had to lay out all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And what they've basically done, and I said this on Football Daily, I know it still exists. right, they've made a rod for their own back, and it's made their lives more difficult because they've given themselves essentially a manifesto they then have to fulfill. Mm. And it's meant that they can't move away from that. And the best people to do that would be people like Ancelotti, who have not engaged in the politics. Yep. When it came down to Gareth Bale's agent comment the other day, he didn't say anything. He was literally like, maybe it was just best he didn't say anything. And that wasn't him having a go. But if you look at the comments in context, they're actually incredibly political. And they are him being as diplomatic as he can. So if they're getting rid of a guy who's diplomatic and they bring someone in who's not. I mean, Zidane knows how to toe the line. Do you know, like, he will toe the Real Madrid line.
Will he? Will he just be a puppet again?
I don't think they'll get him in there. I think you'll see. You might see Klopp coming in.
But that's what I'm saying. Dave will tactically know. How well? I mean, it would be amazing to see Ronaldo in a Klopp system. Like, how aggressive
it
is
wouldn't,
that?
Klopp needs young players. I think that's why he needs players in their early 20s, like the 19, 20, 21. Like the likes of, you know, Kagawa that came back to Dortmund and was 25. Or you're 25, 26, he was past it. So the likes of Ronaldo, you can't. Another thing about Klopp is it's very everyone presses together. You know, you don't see that at Real Madrid.
But do you think you could see him adapt? And you think, because this is what I think is, Klopp has never, he's managed at the high level, but he's managed a team who were always underdogs.
Do you know,
if you go to Real Madrid then, and this is why Ancelotti is so amazing, and essentially why the True Geordies video about Pep Guardiola was so interesting. About why he was overrated, was that you're looking at him in an incredibly high-end context. It's like saying Usain Bolt was slowed down. Yeah, mate, he's still fucking faster than you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's always going to be faster than you. And that's the point, is to maintain that high level, this takes... to earn nothing but get good performances still takes an incredibly high level of coaching from Carlo Ancelotti. Because if you or I went in there, there's no respect. There's a big difference.
That's what I think with Ancelotti. He's a good coach. He's a very good coach. He gets on with the players. He teaches the players a lot about being a player because he was a brilliant ball-playing central midfielder. But what he's not got is that tactical ability to change things, like a la Mourinho, a la Ferguson, a la Rafa Benitez. You know, all the good tactical managers will see that, you know, there's an issue with our, you know, no one sitting in front of our back four. Let's bring on a defensive midfielder. Let's put a...
That's why he suffered against Juve, Dave. It's because Allegri outthought him.
We'll come back to Ancelotti because we've got to mention.
That's also why Xabi Alonso was good for him, because he was a thinking midfielder.
Yeah, exactly. He did his thinking on the pitch for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Coached the lads.
And that's what you need out there. Anyway, sorry. I'm rounding that point off.
Obviously they are the finalists. Yeah, Real Madrid is post-mortem. But in terms of Juve, so you were talking earlier about the tactics, you're loving that diamond, all this sort of stuff. How do you think that's going to work up against Barcelona? Like, what are they going to employ? Is he going to stick with a similar system? You know, a bit more pragmatic. You know,
I think it'll play the same. You know, the 4-4-2 diamond hybrid as it was yesterday. Where
they did look vulnerable, though, didn't they?
They looked vulnerable in the first half because of one man, Paul Pogba, wasn't doing his job properly. I was quite critical of Pogba last night. Obviously, he's a hyped up player. He scores brilliant goals, but when you watch Pogba play week in, week out, he's hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be so hot in one half, he'll be cold in the other. He'll be rubbish all game, and he'll score a 30-yard screamer. He isn't the finished article, and you know these prices that people are quoting, £300,000 a week, is absolutely crazy for him. He's nowhere near. You look at players that are 22 at the moment, reeling off a list of players that are probably better than David Alaba, Verratti. Bernat from Bayern Munich. They're three players that are definitely better than him at this level, and they're his age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where this player's been overhyped because of his technical ability.
He's mercurial.
He's mercurial. Yeah. He's enigmatic.
Do you know what? It helps him he's in Italy as well, because Mario Balotelli suffers from the same thing.
That's who I would say he's like, is Mario Balotelli. He's got great potential, but if his attitude stinks, he ain't going to get nowhere.
We'll come back to Pogba as well, because that's how we're translating. But I want to know, do you think Juventus have a chance? So everyone's saying this
absolutely.
Barcelona team,
they absolutely
are the favourites, no, they you know, absolutely this front three can blow away. But do you think that they can, obviously can win it, but do you think they will?
I'm sorry, I cut Dave off midway through analysing those tactics. So maybe it's best that Dave finishes tactically.
Well, I'd say that one thing obviously you've got to do to stop a Pirlo team is stop Pirlo, his man marking, put him out of the game. Real Madrid didn't do that, and that was a massive error. I'd probably say that Barcelona are not going to do that either. I reckon they'll sit off Juventus a bit and potentially play on the counter attack against them. Let Juventus have the ball, let Pirlo dominate, and hit them on the break. When you've got the likes of, you know, Messi, Neymar, Suarez versus Bonucci and Chiellini on the counter attack, that's quite frightening in a way. I thought,
but then Juve will sit deep.
This is the thing. If Juve play on the counter attack, then
isn't that fascinating though? That all of last season we were talking about this buccaneering, fast flowing football. Dortmund have suffered this season. Atletico haven't gotten to the final. They were beaten on the way by who put Atletico out?
They lost to Barca, was it?
No, they didn't lose to Barca because Barca beat all the champions on their way. Barca beat City, PSG, Bayern, Juve. That's all the champions.
That's the Champions League.
No, but that's the point, is that they've beaten the actual champion of every league.
That's what I mean.
They beat Bayern. But they were also in the same group as Ajax.
Who are obviously Dutch champions.
Yeah, but this is my point, is that they've gone all the way to the final, they've beaten all the champions. Wouldn't it be amazing now if Juve go and take that? Do you know what I mean? Like, if they beat Juve, they will have beaten every champion. Or the important champions.
Atletico got knocked out by Real. Terrible knowledge, lads.
Okay, we forget about that. We don't care.
Let's move on to the other semi-final, which was obviously Barcelona, like we were just...
Well, we've already moved on to that, mate.
Yeah, true.
We've seamlessly transitioned until you signposted it back.
Suarez has got in here, and he's got Neymar in support, and Barcelona have their away goal. And all the optimism that came Bayern Munich's way as a result of Bonatia's early goal has lasted just 8 minutes. Barcelona are Champions League finalists for the first time in 4 years.
So it was actually a better game. It was close enough, what it was going to be, in terms of, I thought it was done and dusted.
You know, I don't know.
Going in, but
can I just say one more thing about Juve for the final?
We'll come back to you. I'll mention it a little bit. So anyway, you thought it was done and dusted, but it wasn't quite that, was it? Bayern sort of almost came back.
Mate, it was done.
In a way.
No, it was done. Chris Hennage, the journalist, texted me and he said, it's like, you know, when you're playing FIFA with your younger brother and you go, all right, yeah, cool, have those back. And you give them a couple of goals. Yeah. They were possibly a little bit scared.
Okay,
but there was never any real narrative there.
So, would you say tactically, again, it was Pep Guardiola's fault? In the first leg, people were sort of, you know, up until the 70 minutes, you might argue he got it right. But after the fact, he got it wrong with playing the three centre-backs, a lot of space there to exploit, all this sort of stuff. In the second leg, he obviously had less options because he had to chase the game.
Do you think he did control it like he said that he wanted to?
So what? There was a brilliant piece of analysis on Monday Night Football from Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher before the game, talking about how Guardiola was doing this man marking pressing system where they went 3v3 at the back and they got the extra man in midfield and they were pressing. Very similar to when Pep's Barcelona played Athletic Bilbao, and literally what Bilbao did, they man marked and they followed them all over the pitch. It was a Bielsa side.
Yeah.
And it was one of the times that Pep Guardiola has thought, these guys were better than my side. So what he tried to do, he tried to do that to the Barcelona team. The problem is, this Barcelona team is a little bit more on the counter-attack. It's a little bit more structured. It's an Enrique Barcelona team, not a Pep team. And I think Pep tried to beat himself in a way by playing this way. And obviously, in the first leg, Lionel Messi beat Rafinha, flicked the ball on, and went through to Suarez, and Suarez had a big chance. That same thing happened in the second leg for the second Neymar goal, where Lionel Messi won an aerial duel in the middle of the pitch, flicked the ball onto Suarez. Suarez cleaned through, and they were scared of Manuel Neuer, so they scored the FIFA goal against him, didn't they?
Do you know what's interesting though, is that's what Pep never had, was he never had a fully developed winger that could go alongside those guys. And now he's essentially got, I mean, Barcelona have a dangerous winger in Luis Suarez. He's a striker, but he plays wide, so he's a winger in that sense. And he cuts in so easily. I mean, he's always played the flanks since Brendan Rodgers came up with it. He's always sort of cut
he's
in from
the
outside.
He's making the space.
He's playing as a number nine, isn't he?
But that's what I'm saying, is that he basically drags people out wide, and can go back inside. So the markers go out and then he goes back in. And the interesting side of that is that Pep never had that at Barcelona. He had Pedro and other people like that.
Because he played it a little bit differently, didn't he? He played Messi through the middle and then the wingers came in, the wingers cut in, which is a bit different
exactly.
from what his team does.
And I think it's not, I mean, he can't be that tactically naive to play against them like that.
Yeah.
But I don't understand.
It appeared it. It came
but, yeah. No, but that's the point, is that's why I'm slightly worried for Juve in the final, is because Suarez is one of those unpredictable players. Messi's one of those Neymar's an unpredictable player. And that's what makes it difficult to predict, is against that back line, unless Chiellini's hot on him, which you'd imagine, again, there's another amazing narrative, Chiellini versus Suarez in this final, then what's going to happen there?
And Evra as well, isn't it?
But that's the interesting thing, is there's so many different narratives in this.
So come back to Pep a little bit. So it's the second season in a row now. He's been there 2 years.
To be fair, he's got to the semi-final twice.
Yes, but they've been knocked out by a deservedly winning team.
Yeah.
After winning the league, their form drops off second year in a row. Obviously, for a club of Bayern's size and quality, with them dominating their own league, the Champions League is the barometer for success. So would you say his 2 years now have been somewhat of a failure? Narrow, glorious league title winning failure, but at the same time, should he not have done better in those two semi-finals?
Are you saying he fulfilled just the basics?
He's completely changed his style, though. He's a lot of credibility there. You know, he's changed the way. You could argue that part of Germany winning the World Cup was down to Pep. You know, he changed a lot of the German players from counter-attacking players to ball-playing players, similar to how Spain were dominant at international level.
Muller's evolved as a player.
Muller's definitely evolved. It looks like they might have fallen out a little bit, you know, with the
something
comments from last
there,
week.
Something going.
But Lewandowski's evolved.
In
just a season.
It's crazy how the wingers that he's lost have pretty much cost him everything this year, and that's.
So do you think the injuries were the key?
100%. You know,
factor in deciding.
He would have had
look at those two guys. Those two guys, had they stayed fit, they were in for being that third guy in the Ballon d'Or. And that's, I mean, again, I'll make that point again. If you're a high-end player or you're a high-end manager, it's small margins, isn't it? And the semi-final is a small margin.
Let me ask you something. So you're saying that is the deciding factor, but I've seen a lot of people say that basically the problem for Bayern Munich is that they dominate their own league. There's not enough of a challenge there, especially this year.
So do Real and Barcelona.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to say to you. So people are saying there's no competition for the title in their league. Recently it's made them soft. When they come up against a top-class team like Barcelona, they're not used to it, you know, and they paid for it in the end. You could say, look at Juventus, they're in a similar situation, they're dominating their league and they've done just fine, they've got through to the final. What do you say to that argument that people have been making?
I don't think that's a very valid argument, to be quite honest. I think Juventus is a better argument. Juventus, Serie A is very weak at the moment. You definitely say, you know, the best team, Roma, you'd say the second best team, have pretty much fallen off in the last like 20 games. They've been awful. You know, look in Germany, you've got Borussia Mönchengladbach coming back, who are a top side, Wolfsburg, who are a top side, who did over Bayern. I think it is just down to this, they lost the players, so they have to play a certain tactical way. You know, you have the likes of Schweinsteiger and Thiago playing out wide. That's nowhere near their strength. And I'd say maybe what they could do in the league is, you know, put more money back into the league, sign more players based in the Bundesliga, so you get more money that's
still
going to
filter
down.
Well,
they sort of do that, but they do it on free transfers. Imagine if they'd spent 40 million on Lewandowski. You know, they did spend a lot on Mario Götze.
Yeah, but still not enough.
You'd
say that basically Bayern's selfishness is again, they've slightly made a rub for their own back by creating the situation to have such a monopoly and such dominance in
but
Bundesliga.
But does that affect?
Can I just say though, there's also something that people never point out that people do point this out. But there's in each country there are teams who have political influence as well, and Bayern have an incredible political influence in their country. You know, I'm a big fan of Adidas as a brand, in terms of kind of footballing branding. I think they do, you know, obviously they're a Bayern.
You want some free kit or something?
Give me some free. No.
Adidas, if you're listening, send us one.
I've had that, right? That's been part of my life at one point, where I just got free boots and those kind of things. But my point would be that they have incredible political influence within UEFA, because for a very long time they've been an influential team. Look at the guys who sit, Rummenigge, look at all the guys who sit on their board, look at all the guys who sit behind them. They have incredible political influence, and it allows them to influence the right people in the right place, to be able to make sure that teams such as Wolfsburg, teams such as Dortmund, sit in a bracket that means they can be competitive, but not quite as competitive as Bayern can be.
It's like whenever
the same for Real and Barca.
Whenever they get to a level where they can compete, they take all their talent. We've seen recently Borussia Dortmund, there's been times where it's happened to Gladbach. It happens.
They're talking about De Bruyne, taking De Bruyne from Wolfsburg this summer.
But imagine if that happens. That That's the same. I mean, the best and most overt model, if you're a fan of the Premier League, is when Villa lost all their belief because they lost all their good players. They lost Gareth Barry. They lost Martin O'Neill, essentially. Yeah. He's the only manager who's going to get them there. They could have lost Degbon Lahore. They lost Ashley Young. But what I'm saying is, if you look at that on a grander level, even when you just lose those guys, it takes away from the squad belief, because it's like, well, if those guys are going, why should I believe in it? Do you know what I mean? And that's what Bayern are good at doing. They're good at taking the political wheels off another side.
Let me bring it back to Pep specifically. So it's looking like next year potentially is his last year at Bayern Munich. Last year was contract.
No, he'll sign another contract.
I don't know if he will. I think he might.
I think he will. I think he's politically posturing at the moment. I think he'll go a little bit longer.
Either way, so say even if he doesn't leave, after those 3 years he's been at Bayern Munich, he will be judged on European success, I think, more so than domestic success. So what do you think he needs to do next season in order to try and change this trend in the last 2 years of getting knocked out of the semi-finals pretty comprehensively, as it turns out?
Face someone else?
Yeah. I've seen some. So some people are sort of saying, in terms of, you know, you mentioned the injuries there as a key factor, they're saying that he needs to revitalise the squad because it is aging. You've got key players like Schweinsteiger, Robin, Ribéry, who aren't the youngest players anymore. Do they need to bring younger players in, like De Bruyne? There's some mention of Koke, people like that.
Gertz is part of that team.
Yeah,
he's not that key element to it.
Yeah, but that's the point, is anywhere else he would be. So that's the point, is they do have talent in there that can influence that side.
Okay, but what do you think he needs to change then? Because obviously he needs to change something, because they're not getting through to the final. They're not competing with those top class teams.
I'm not sure it's personnel.
It's become more pragmatic. I think that's what it's got to be.
So you think it's a tactical thing? Pep Guardiola can't just go out every game, I'm playing my style, no matter what.
But he hasn't done that. Exactly. He's been out-psyched by other managers.
But he has also sort of stuck with this sort of pressing system against Barcelona. And you look at his midfield, quite old Lahm, Schweinsteiger. They need to sit deep and hit people on the counter-attack because they're older players.
Sure.
And what they need to do is they need to get Mario Götze playing behind Lewandowski. They need to get that Borussia Dortmund combination back together. Lewandowski is one of the best players in the world. When you hit the ball to him early, you know, bringing people
that
in, just scoring, he just did a goal. You know, he just put it away.
Just
it was like
goal,
it's like when he scored four goals against Real Madrid. He just did four goals. He got the ball four times and scored four times. They need to get the best out of him, and I think that's Guardiola at the start of the season, the first probably half, maybe three quarters of the season, wasn't getting anything out of Lewandowski. Lewandowski looked a bit like, you know, I don't really care about this at the moment. I'm not the main man anymore. And he's the key man. Lewandowski is the key man for them to win the Champions League next season. It has to be him and his goals.
That kind of goes a little bit against what people think about Pep's system, though, doesn't it? I mean, I know, actually, though, Messi was an incredibly influential guy at Barcelona, and probably the focus of Pep's system. But that's a little bit further behind Lewandowski.
And he's also a different player, you know, he's a ball player.
Exactly.
But Lewandowski is a fantastic ball player as well. Forget how good he is on the ball, you know, playing passes and playing through balls and creating chances.
But that's what's going to be interesting, right? Is if you look at the Bayern team, they've spread their stats around, they've got a lot of different influences within that side. Look at this Barca side who got to the final. Who's got the top assists?
Messi.
Who's got the top goal attempts?
Messi.
Who's got the top goals?
Messi.
Who's got the top everything in that side? Messi.
Messi.
And it's testament to him, but also testament to a system, which means that if they need to, they can bypass Messi a little bit.
So listen,
but he's still
up,
the fulcrum of that.
Yeah. Wrapping up the Champions League team, Barcelona and Juventus in the final. I'm a little bit torn who I want to win, but who do you think will win? I think Barcelona are going to win.
Can we contrast the brain against if Bayern win it? I'll say it again. They'll beat City, PSG, Bayern, and they'll beat Juve in the final.
All
to
the
literally
Champions.
Win... the Champions League.
Yeah, it's a bit
that,
more,
that will be.
That's a bit more.
It's arguably one of the best sides ever. You'd say it's up there with the 2010-11 Barca team when it was Villa, Pedro, Messi up front, where Messi was the main man.
Do you know what else, though? One thing we haven't mentioned, Ter Stegen. Just for a second.
He was incredible.
Such vulnerability. The vulnerability of his saves.
Of a goalie is key to...
No, it's key to their career.
Oh, yeah.
Because the few moments he was called on, that goal where he just slightly gets a hand on it and then just tips it around the post.
That was the most impressive. The one before, almost before he dug it out, that was as impressive.
I'd say another thing about what was impressive about his distribution, he was finding the fullbacks brilliantly when Bayern were pressing, but anyway.
So do you think Barca are going to win?
Yes.
I think Juve will win. And I think it... Because... And here comes the comment that Chris sent me beforehand. I don't actually have it immediately in front of me. It goes to something like this. And it was when Dortmund were playing Juve. I think it must be in the Champions League, right?
Yeah, Dortmund,
the comment is... And Chris Hennage sent me this. I want to credit this to him because I never looked it up. It's something like, we're facing the biggest challenge in world football. An Italian side that need a draw.
Yeah.
And... that's the interesting side. It's an Italian side that only need a 1-0 win. Yep. Or they only need Tevez or Llorente to do something quickly and then watch them sit and just go, go on then, do it. And then we'll break. And then if they break on Barca, Barca do not have a back line that can cope with that.
I'd say they they might do. I think Gerard Piqué has been unbelievable.
Look at
we can preview it closer. We can do it closer. But we'll wrap up there because we have taken half the podcast.
I'm happy with that. Listeners are.
Guys, there's all the Champions League chat. Let us know who you think is going to win the final on Twitter. Tweets at the front three. And we'll be back.
And why? Not just
and why, yeah. Yes, of course. We'll be back in a little bit with a bit of transfer news. So let's talk a little bit of transfer news, the three biggest stories of the last week or so. Yeah. Number one, we've already touched on it, so let's briefly just talk about Jurgen Klopp at Real Madrid. So the story is Bild are reporting that Carlo Ancelotti would be sacked, which you all sort of know is going to happen anyway. And Jurgen Klopp is the man Florentino Perez wants to bring in as a replacement. So we've already talked a little bit about Klopp's systems, Ancelotti. Do you think it's the right manager for Real Madrid? Yes or no?
No.
I mean, because of his tactical.
They're always going to make it work. A manager, if he takes it, will always make it work. But what I'm saying is, I think there's other candidates that I'd rather see.
Such as?
I want to see Zidane go through and take it. Just partly because, you know what, politically, I never wish people to fail. But
I want Zidane.
I don't like Zidane. I don't dislike Zidane. I like Zidane. But I dislike the way that Real Madrid conduct themselves.
Yes.
And that's what I'm saying is that you know what? Have your cake and eat it, Real Madrid. And Klopp is not their cake. Klopp is red velvet cake, all right? And they want thick, gooey chocolate cake, all right?
Fair enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Dave, why do you want to see Zidane fan?
It's just one of those things where he hasn't done the Willie Sagnolan, like gone to Bordeaux.
He's not done the Pep Guardiola.
There you go.
He's not done the Pep Guardiola. He's not done the Alan Pardew.
Alan Pardew would say.
He's just not gone there, and I don't feel that he's learned. Obviously, he's been to see Pep, and he's done this and he's done that. But what's he really done? In a way, like, has he gone and managed the reserve team on his own? You know, he's obviously got this other coach that's apparently coached because he's not got his license. I think there's a bit missing there with Zidane. I don't know if he's got it. I think he'll be another sort of Ancelotti. You know, Ancelotti was brought through when he finished off as a player. I think he's going to be tactically unaware. Yeah. Hopefully he proves me wrong. Hopefully he'll play brilliant attacking football and Real Madrid will be awesome. But I just can't see it. I think some players, you know, the players that are ultra, ultra talented, the likes of Maradona and those types of players, they just don't make good managers.
That's fair enough.
Have you
got a lot of evidence
apart from
Kenny Dalglish?
No,
you say Pep Guardiola left through
off. Kenny Dalglish and
Cruyff.
Come on, Kenny Dalglish was amazing, man. This week, in fact, today when we're recording this podcast, 20 years since Kenny Dalglish won the league.
There you go.
With go and listen on the BBC iPlayer to Joy of the Rovers. Edited by Lawrence McKenna. Kenny Dalglish, amazing manager. Who else? Johan Cruyff.
Pep
Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola. Yeah.
But Pep Guardiola was not at the top.
Pep Guardiola won things at Barcelona, mate.
But what I mean with Zidane and these great players, like the Maradona,
you mean that mercurial player?
For example, Messi and Ronaldo won't be good managers.
Interesting.
Someone tweeted that the other day. There was like a photoshopped Messi and Ronaldo in the future of El Clasico. Yeah.
So the other big story this week, don't want to talk too much about it because we already talked about Pogba, The Guardian, which is obviously a bit more trustworthy.
It's not, but take the piss out of these stories, mate.
No. So a proper report saying the City have offered Yaya Touré as a make-weight in a potential deal for Paul Pogba. Do you think... Well, he is valued at 75 million, right? But do you think if he does leave, should he leave Juventus, the finalists and champions of Italy, should he leave? And do you think City is the best place for him if he does leave?
I think he should stay for one more season.
I think he should stay for four more seasons.
I think Serie A is a waste of his talent.
But saying that though, they've got the best European coefficient this season. So Serie A is on the rise. Juventus. It is on the up. There's teams, you know, the likes of Lazio are coming back.
Napoli.
The likes of Roma, Napoli, Fiorentina. The competitiveness is not great now, but I can see the upward curve. It's the start now. They've had too much, you know, they've had too many poor seasons where these teams haven't competed, and now we're sort of seeing Napoli, Fiorentina and Juventus being in the semi-final of the European competitions. I think it's time for it to change.
I'd just like to see him in an environment I think would suit him, which is a high end, something like you say, he has hot and cold weeks, right?
Yeah.
If you're in the Premier League or a high intensity league, which we know statistically is a more intense league than Serie A, what are we going to see from Paul Pogba then? Will we see him completely drop out of games, or will we see him engage with those back lines week after week and be like,
I'd love to see him over here.
Or will he effectively upgrade from the Yaya Touré role? Because he does kind of fill a similar position there.
Yaya Toure is like so far ahead of Paul Pogba.
Yeah, but now, but imagine what we think about. Imagine what we thought about Yaya Toure when he left Barcelona. We knew he was vastly underrated, but we also knew that he needed to go to a side where they'd appreciate his talents more. What I'm saying is, I'm just wondering, Juve can cope without Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba can go. I'm just not sure. I'd like to see him go to Man City.
I wouldn't want to see him at Man City anyway.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Or I wouldn't want to see him back at United either. Wouldn't take him back.
Well, coming on to United, the other Liverpool story that's been rumbling on for ages is, of course, David De Gea.
Yeah.
So he hasn't officially signed a new contract yet.
Or unofficially.
But his current deal runs out at the end of next summer.
Mm.
So you've got the Express, you've got the Mirror, you've got the Mat. Everyone basically saying...
All the big names.
All saying, not the most reliable, but you know, all together, they're basically saying that they think he is going to leave.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to leave? Do you think he's going to stay? And how important is he for Manchester United?
Going for that first one, how important he is. I looked the other day in terms of United's results, the saves that he'd made in these games. Worked out that he'd won them an extra 36 points or something stupid like that.
Yeah,
you know,
ridiculous.
The games like West Ham, Everton, Arsenal, Liverpool, there were so many games where I looked back and I thought, if David De Gea hadn't made those two world-class saves, we'd lost that game or we wouldn't have got that draw. And it was pretty incredible. And you forget that how he's been excellent, but he has been pretty good.
Do you think, though, I mean, okay, so here's my question about David De Gea. He's a wonderful goalkeeper. Fantastic. Like, he's incredibly able. If you'd had a more experienced goalkeeper in there, say a Victor Valdez, would you have had a back line that was so well marshalled, which is not something that David De Gea currently does, that he wouldn't have had to make those saves?
I would say no, because I don't think any of our centre-halves at the moment are leaders, are commanders. I don't think...
But what if they'd had a goalkeeper that would
organise? I think that you need both. I think that you need to have a really drilled back line. I think you need a centre-back that is very, very vocally dominant, and you need a goalkeeper. You need both to have that sort of connection. I think if you have one and not the other, it doesn't work. If you have neither, obviously, it doesn't work. But I just think... I think it would have been exactly the same. I think David De Gea has bailed us out, and we've had to have... I think it suited Man United this year that we've had a goalkeeper that has got the reflexes and has got this and has got that. That kind of works out for us.
So can I just have one more follow-up question after that? That's exactly the answer I was... That's exactly the answer I thought. What then do United do in the off-season? A, if De Gea goes, then they bring in Valdez, right? It would be the natural thought.
I think you've got to go for Hugo Lloris straight away. You've got to...
Okay. Then they go for Hugo Lloris. But again, we've seen Lloris hasn't been able to make the best of that back line.
I heard Asimir Begovic.
Nah, I wouldn't want... But Begovic is, you know, he's a Stoke player. He's a player that... He's at a Mignolet in a way where he's very, very good.
Mignolet was voted player of the season at Liverpool. Thank you very much, mate.
Let me just explain myself. So Mignolet and Begovic are goalkeepers that are good at taking a lot of shots in a game, being active in the game. They're not good at not being in the play, and that happens at Man United. That happened even more at Man United this season.
He's been in the play quite a lot.
But then that's because we've been making such mistakes. We made 29.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mistakes in the Premier 29 defensive errors in the Premier League this season. Only Everton have made more, but only three of those have resulted in goals. So that is David De Gea bailing us out. He's like made the most 1v1 saves. He's got, you know, he's made more saves than any other team in the top four.
So David, who do you get in that back line to solve your centre back issues?
Obviously the obvious Mats Hummels, it's the man at the moment, isn't it, really? You think he's, you know, he's a leader, he could lead the line, he can play the ball out the back. Hopefully he can speak English. I'm not too sure whether he can.
Even if he can't, that's not a huge problem.
No, not a massive one, but you'd like to fit in straight away. You'd like him to be communicating with his teammates, you're having a crack in training, having a bit of a laugh. But I think, you know, that he's the main man, I reckon, Mats Hummels.
Do you think he's attainable?
I think he wants to leave Borussia Dortmund. I think
I would love to see him in a United shirt. Don't you think Mats Hummels would look good in a United shirt? An Adidas enough. United shirt, which I'd love, is one that he would look great in. You know what I mean?
Right, okay. That's it for the transfer news.
Yeah.
So quick little break.
Transfer news.
Get on with the questions. Perfect transition. So these ones we're going to have to answer quite.
Mate, I've still got to open this kit.
Yeah, I know. So we'll try and do these relatively quickly. So not in depth answers. Fire. Right, okay.
I'd rather have in depth stuff. I thought that was quite good chat. Do you know?
No,
what I mean?
Amazing. But we've run out of time, so.
What happened to Memphis Depay the weekend? He was pretty good. Cool. See the free kick.
Yeah, I saw you tweet, mate. He scored 7 this season. Am I correct?
Bloody hell! It's fucking crazy.
There you go. Include that in your shitty podcast.
I'm thinking like a minute per question, so yeah. We just go.
Sorry.
Okay, you ready?
Sorry.
So here we go with the questions, all submitted via Twitter at the Front Three. Fire them in if you want to fire in more for next week. The first question, I like this one a lot because I'm quite interested to find the answer.
Some great questions this week.
So JM at JMedicine1, he said, a bit of a personal question, but he wants to know he wants to know how we came to support the teams that we support.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's quite good. So go on, Dave.
Well, you can tell from Dave's accent how we came to support the team.
Well, obviously from Manchester. Man United fan. I don't know where it came. It just a family thing. I think my mum was she's from Southampton, so she supported Southampton with her granddad. But obviously, we were in Manchester, so she took me to United, and obviously, season ticket holder there. First game was Fiorentina versus Man United. Paul Scholes scored an absolute thunderbolt, and Gabriel Batistuta scored a thunderbolt. I think it was maybe 1999, 2000. Brilliant game.
I'm actually from Liverpool. I was born in Liverpool. Lived the first couple of years of my life in Liverpool. A lot of my family are still in Liverpool. It's such a lovable city. And just down the years, I've just had experiences that have compounded that. Like it was, you know, for me, I grew up at a time when it was impossible to be a Liverpool fan because I didn't grow up in Liverpool when I went to school. And the first time I went to school, people were like, you know, who do you support? And I was like, oh, Liverpool. And everyone was like, you support a shit team, like, you know. I would have been 6 or whatever, right? And that's when Liverpool, 1994, Liverpool were at the very lowest. Like, they'd won the FA Cups, but they were crap. And, like, United were imperious at that time.
My first memory of a football game was when Eric Cantona scored the goal
in the
FA Cup final.
Yeah. And but the thing is, that wasn't the best. That was when Liverpool were at their very worst, because all their players had been corrupted by the media. And they were so unlovable as a side. But down the year, stepping out in cream suits, look it up on YouTube, in the final, is the biggest wanker move you could possibly pull. Stan Collymore put that side. Steve McManaman, Robbie Fowler. Yes. Some guys there with humility, but then people like Stan Collymore. And you think, and I just grew to love him. A few years ago, and this is the best experience I've ever had as a fan. By the way, my first game was Sion v Liverpool. Liverpool won 6-3. Incredible game. Guy turned up at halftime. It was 3-0 Liverpool. He went, how are you doing? The guy's like, not miss much, don't worry, mate. Liverpool are fucking rampant, right? Anyway, I made a Liverpool documentary a few years ago for TalkSport. Absolutely incredible. One of the first huge audio documentaries I made. I got to talk to Ian Callaghan, most Liverpool appearances ever. Got to talk to Jan Molby. Got to talk to John Barnes. Got to talk to Roy Evans. Got to talk to all these guys. And I found out a lot more about the club. And the only thing I'd say to you is, if you're a new fan, you're a young fan, go and understand why your club is such an institution. If you're a United fan, go and look it up, because it'll give you so much more. When people say it's the Liverpool way, it's the United way, they don't just mean Ferguson and, you know, Rodgers. Even over this past week, listening to someone like Tim Sherwood speak, I've heard so much more about why Tim Sherwood's respected now. And you just get so much more appreciation for now as opposed to in the past. We're so now, you know, we're talking about the Champions League and all those kind of things. Just look at the past. Adam, sorry, you said a minute per question, but I've really fucked
that
up.
Yeah, we.
So why do you support Spurs?
I'm literally only a Spurs fan because my dad supports Spurs.
But you see, I like that.
It's passed through the.
It's the bloodline.
Yeah, of course.
Game of Thrones.
So, yeah, I mean, you feel like you don't have a choice, really. Yeah. But I'm glad. I love Spurs. I think it's a great team to support. Always the underdog when I was younger.
Really?
They always finished like 14th or 15th, wouldn't they?
What do you mean now, when I was younger? They still are.
No, but they're fifth. They're fifth, aren't they? Sticks, one of those teams. But back in the day, yeah, 14th, 15th was terrible.
I never feel threatened when I play Spurs. You know what I mean?
I always used to think Liverpool were terrible. Do you know, like, when you were saying Liverpool, that was a bad patch? Terrible. But then I didn't understand when I was younger that they actually had ever been successful, that they had that. It wasn't until you're like 10, 12 you start realising, oh God, they actually were.
Because when you're 6,
amazing.
You have no idea of history.
God, Liverpool terrible. Yeah, just like, really bad.
And you wondered why people kept saying things like, oh, you know, it's the Liverpool way. I was always
what are you talking about?
Liverpool way is losing a match, mate. Like, Liverpool way is having Steve McManaman run down the wing for 90 minutes doing little stepovers and then Robbie Fowler missing a goal, which virtually never happened. You know what I mean?
Let me come on to the next one. It's less personal, more footy. So Aaron, at Meech Isn't Dead says, will Man United or Arsenal be Chelsea's main rival for the title next year? So basically, who is going to be Chelsea's main rival next season?
I think it'll be more than... I think it'll be United.
Who's going to finish runners-up? Or, well, that's presumptuous.
Chelsea to an imperious Louis van Gaal team, mate.
Yeah, who's going to be the main challenger for
I think it's going to be Man United because of the fact that Wenger, tactically, still a little bit... You know, he can get beat. I do think this weekend that Man United will turn over Arsenal just because Van Gaal has something over the top six teams. You look at his record top six this year. Man United have earned 19 points. That's four more than any other side in the top six. Mm-hmm. They've picked up six wins, one draw and two defeats. It's a pretty imperious record. If they learn how to beat the smaller teams, and Memphis Depay will help them do that, you know, someone that shoots, someone that can score a free kick, someone that can bang a goal in from 20 yards, I think we will, you know, Man United will go on to be the main title challengers to Chelsea.
Here's why Arsenal will be the main challengers. One of the main challengers. Just because Dave's only made some amazing points for United. Alexis Sanchez will have a season under his belt at Arsenal. He'll be incredible next season, providing he doesn't get injured, because his muscular disposition does mean that from time to time he may get injured.
Yes.
And he wasn't always fit at Barcelona. They will buy a better centre back. They will buy a better goalkeeper.
Yes, I think that's it.
And they will, that's a better Arsenal side. Yeah. Hopefully, they'll have a fit midfield combo of either Wiltshire and a foreigner to go alongside.
They've
him,
also stumbled across this Coquelin.
Yeah, Coquelin Ramsey, I reckon.
Some of those problems.
For me, that was a bit of a stopgap.
We forgot about one man. Santi Cazorla has been playing central midfield for the last 2 months, and he's been incredible.
This is the cherry on the top of my argument, Dave. That Santi Cazorla will be. Will be again another great part of that side. And if they buy someone else, so basically they need three people: goalkeeper, centre back, another centre forward. And you've got a side who've got the nucleus of something that can challenge for a title.
A lot of the parts are in place, and they've just got a few little things.
If not, they'll still make sure they take points away from United or Chelsea and make the title race more interesting.
It'd be interesting to see City's transfer policy over the summer, because obviously they're going to.
Well, they'll have a new manager.
Well, apparently today The Guardian is saying stick with Pellegrini. They're going to stick with one more year.
I mean, that's one more year. But that's interesting.
It's because they want to get Pep, don't they? At the end of the day, they just want to match out whenever Pep's contract runs out. So if Pep said he's staying next summer, so they're going to wait on.
It's either Pellegrini or David Platt that's getting managed.
Josh Barton, Josh B said, do you think Pogba is a touch overrated? I think we've already touched it.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
No, I think he's a mercurial talent, therefore not overrated. Thanks for following me, Josh.
Priced at 75 million valued, you'd probably say he's overpriced. Maybe a little bit overrated.
He's overrated then, but I don't think anyone's going to pay him. No one's going to pay that for him.
Kiyu Karumanchi says, if Barca, Bayern, and Madrid are the best three teams in Europe on paper, who is the fourth? You probably say Juve, since they've gone to the final, but is there a better team?
No, because Juve aren't the best team on paper.
Who's better on paper than those teams? So if you look at Chelsea, are they one of the better teams on paper?
Yeah, probably, right? I mean, on paper, you've got that back line on paper.
If you look
at
the starting 11s,
it's very difficult. It's sort of a little bit like the best players in the world, where you've got Messi, Ronaldo, then there's a group.
Suarez, exactly the same. Neymar, all those kinds of
players. Yeah, it's exactly the same as clubs. You know, you could look at Atletico Madrid, you could look at you know, some of the Germans. Potentially Bayer Leverkusen next season are going to be a surprise package. Borussia Mönchengladbach are going to be a surprise package. But yeah,
Wolfsburg are going to be a surprise package. Yeah. But on paper, they don't. On paper, they don't line up.
So next question is,
sorry, can we just give it? Who's the fourth? Are we going to say? Can we say Chelsea?
I'm going to say Juve. Or I'm going to say Juve this season.
Okay, I'm going to say Chelsea on paper. Chelsea. On paper, Chelsea.
Adnan Qureshi.
Great first name.
Yeah, also my friend on Facebook now, cheers me. What is Barca? What if Barca and Real were in the English Premier League?
That was the question I wanted. I was waiting for this question. This is a brilliant question.
What do you reckon?
That'd be so good, wouldn't it?
It'd mean
City and United would be in the Europa League every year.
Or would it mean that those other sides were stronger? Would it mean that, you know, throughout the season they had to battle more? Because they do have a soft underbelly, right? You know, I'd love the idea.
Could they do it in a wet, windy night instead?
That's a huge question. God. What I'd love is to counter that question. I don't want to see more. Like, I'd love to see more top end sides. What if Rangers and Celtic were in the Premier League?
Probably get relegated.
Possibly.
I reckon they would. At the moment, in the current standard of Scottish football, I think they'd get relegated, but. Barca and Real would be a brilliant addition. Imagine that every week.
Well, this is the interesting
thing.
We'd
have a Super Sunday every week, wouldn't we? It'd be fantastic.
It'd be I like the different tiers that we've got in the league.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that mix of teams.
It's also good to look at people like Swansea.
Swansea. Dayson Adamson at Dayson 1996.
Thanks, Adamson.
He's a super fan. He's always commenting. Love it. He said Gary Monk for manager of the season. Thoughts?
Yes.
They've dropped away.
They could now.
They did have their little blimp, didn't they?
And Southampton potentially to get into that, you know, the Europa League.
Well, they've beaten United twice this season.
Yeah, they've done a double over Arsenal as well.
Yeah, double over Arsenal for the first time in like 30-something years.
Well, Big Sam, manager of the season, getting his team in through the back door into the Europa League.
Right, in the fair play.
Lads, just don't go out there and foul anyone. We're good. We can lose 9-0. It doesn't matter.
I think we've answered it many times on different
things. Oh, Dave's got some stats.
We've got some Gary Monk stats.
Go on.
Yeah, go on.
So Gary Monk this season has played the 4-2-3-1. That's his favourite formation. They picked up 16 wins, 8 draws and 12 defeats in the Premier League this season. They have scored, on average, per game, 1.22 goals.
What? How's that compare, Dave?
And that, so you're looking at Chelsea. So Chelsea have scored 1.94 goals per game. So nearly so 2 goals per game.
Yeah, okay.
But then that's the Champions. But the interesting thing, they've scored 1.22 goals per game and conceded.
Quick fire. Who's your manager of the season? Premier League.
Koeman.
Shit. There's a better, much better point that I completely missed.
Well, what was it?
Go on,
say it.
So, from losing positions,
yeah,
Chelsea have picked up the most points in the Premier League this season, I think, with 13.
But can you say
Swansea are second with 12 points?
Dave makes a compelling case for the monk.
Let me ask you this one question then. So, Ahmad El Sadi said, who do Arsenal need to sign this summer, and is the backline good enough? We talked a little bit about the different positions they need to sign, but if you could pinpoint one player, one position they need to sign someone, for me, it's got to be goalkeeper. I think we saw the other night against Swansea, we saw that it cost them, basically. Ospina, Gary Neville did his old analysis. He showed that Ospina was at fault for that goal. He's not fantastic, and he's a second-choice goalkeeper. Chesney's no good. Goalkeeper's been pretty important position.
Can I throw a spanner in the works?
Go on, bloody hell, go on.
What if United went for Hummels and Arsenal went for Hummels?
Oh, that'd be tasty, wouldn't it?
All I'm saying is, imagine Hummels in the Arsenal backline.
That'd be good. Goalkeeper Jan Sommer from Borussia Mönchengladbach would be absolutely phenomenal for them. You know, ex-Basel goalkeeper. Fantastic.
You want to see him buy Matt Hummels?
Matt Hummels would be the answer for Arsenal as well.
What if Lloris crossed London?
Never.
Would you be upset?
Yeah, because no one's ever done that before.
I would be very upset, but I don't think he'd do that.
Oh yeah, because he's so tied.
No, not at all. But I don't think Spurs.
Levy just wouldn't let it happen.
It would not happen.
They need another striker, but they don't need a. The name that always springs out to me, and I'd love to see in the Premier League, is Lacazette. Yeah, but I don't know how. I mean, he'd be a different option.
Going to join Man United, mate.
That's what I'm saying.
Let me ask you one more question before we move on. We've got to wrap it up. Vittorio said, "Is there any player still playing more deserving of a Champions League than Gianluigi Buffon?"
It's a tough question.
Mm-mm. That's a bit open.
Who hasn't really won it? Obviously,
Zlatan has won famously.
Is he
more deserving?
Zlatan hasn't won it. No.
Has he never won it?
Never won it. No.
Is he more deserving of the medal than Buffon?
No, not Buffon.
Buffon, the loyalty of the man. He's been there for a long time.
It's all coming together for Buffon. He's returning to the place he won the World Cup.
That's the narrative.
He made some pretty good saves the other night. It's all coming together in the same way that, you know, we saw it all coming together for Liverpool in 2005 when everyone was like, they are never going to win. They came through. And I think Buffon has had some amazing moments. He's effectively always been a captain for Juve.
And he's always been at the top of the game for how long now? 20 odd years? It's craziness.
He went down with Juve, came back up with them. Right. All those kind of things.
Shaked it around with Juve.
Apart from Zlatan.
No, Buffon's there.
Nah.
So, that's it for the questions this week. Thanks for sending them in to ask more questions. As I've said throughout the show, at the Front Brie on Twitter. If we didn't answer your questions this week, I can only say sorry.
Is it a three numeral?
Yes, it is.
Just want to make sure of that.
But we make a note of all the questions, so hopefully we'll get around to answer them next time.
Cool.
So, quick little break, and we're going to come back and do the talking points. So, to wrap it up, this is the talking points part of the show. Three of us each bring a topic we want to have a chin wag about. Lawrence's is very exciting this week because he brought in his... what looks like the new Liverpool kit.
Do you want to film this?
Go on.
Okay.
What do you want me to film it on?
No, film it on my phone.
Oh, okay, go on.
And then I'll send you
superior quality.
I hope what happens.
Put your fingers over the lens.
Put it this way or that.
Press record. No, obviously you want to do landscape. And then cool, are you recording?
Yes.
I hope what happens here is that he opens it and there's a Juan Mata, brand new Man United kit.
They what bring the original banter from the email thread earlier.
It has got a Liverpool logo on it, so
yeah. So right,
come on, Lawrence.
A few weeks ago, I look forward to new kits every season. All right, and this is why I want to talk about it. It's because I love new kits, whether it's for Liverpool or anyone else. I just want to see what the new kit is. I'm so excited for United's new kit. I'm so excited for Spurs' sash that they're going to have. Ooh, have you guys seen that?
I've heard.
They're going to have a little sash. Apparently, it's going to look very 80s. It's from Under Armour. That's interesting. So let's look at the first offering of a new kit from New Balance at Liverpool. All right? That's what I'm saying. Sure this arrived at 9:53 this morning. And it's not a gift. I bought this from the Liverpool website. I'm used to getting gifts from football people. So let's see if this kit lives
that is,
up.
That is solid front free commitment, that, mate.
Yeah, I've
solid,
bought a kit.
Solid commitment.
Let me just open this up because it's hard.
I'll give you a hand, mate, but I don't want to touch it.
You don't want to touch it?
Yeah.
You know what? And you know what else encouraged me to do it was that there was another shirt in the pack. All right. Shall I get the new kit out first?
Ooh.
This is a long sleeve. I only go long sleeve.
Oh, yeah. Fair.
Long sleeve.
This is the new kit. All right. Okay. That's interesting. Dave, you can at least touch the kit with me.
No, sorry, mate. I'm not going to be able to.
You're not interested? Is it because you're on full-time devil?
Yeah, sorry, mate. I'll get absolutely hounded next time I'm on YouTube.
Which is never.
Ooh, this actually feels
nice. Anyway, watch where you're pointing the camera.
Sorry, I'm trying to look at the actual kit as well as.
It looks quite retro, doesn't it? It looks like about 95 Liverpool.
It looks all right.
Don't think I like the collar.
I wasn't sure about the collar.
Yeah,
but
that's not a proper collar either. Is it?
Shall I put it on?
I reckon you should, mate.
How's it look? How's
I
it look?
Gotta say, it looks very.
Don't good. Turn it that way.
It looks very.
Right.
Sorry,
how's
I
it
to
look?
Get your whole.
Yeah, it's
how's it look?
It's nice.
Yeah, what do you think, Dave?
Yeah,
I mean,
cool.
You don't like a Liverpool kit in
the
first place.
No, I like the fine detail.
The
There's
fine
a lot of fine
detail
on it.
What does it say on the kit, Dave? It says
Liverpool FC,
which means football club.
Wow.
Ooh, they've understood the culture.
I like that it's different. It's definitely different from kits that we've seen recently, and that is a good thing.
It fits me, which is great.
Which is positive.
Because I was gutted that a kit might not fit me. And let's just put it this way. Warrior let me down in the past, all right?
Okay.
And there's also, Dave, just touch that little bit.
I can't, mate. I'm not going to do any of that bird.
Textured, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
yeah, lovely. How does it look on a hipster's face?
It looks pretty hipsterish.
Yeah,
yeah, the long sleeves.
Yeah, the long sleeves is perfect, aren't they?
It's decent. It's very. I'm going to stop recording now.
No, don't stop.
It was 3 minutes long.
Yeah, I don't care.
No,
hold on a sec. I've got the second shirt that comes with it. I've got a second shirt. What do you think about this, Adam?
Let me take a photo.
Oh, come on, Adam. What do you think?
Even worse than the first one.
This is just a free shirt that comes when you ordered the kit on time, right? And this is the kind of thing I get excited for.
Go on, hold it up.
There you go. What do you think?
How much do you like it?
How much do I like the new kit?
No, the free shirt.
I mean, it's a free shirt, isn't it?
It's a shame about the badge, mate.
Can't really complain.
Do you want to give it away or do you want to keep it for yourself?
Cool, you know what, mate? I do actually quite like it. But okay, do you want to tweet it out? And if someone tweets me something really good,
yeah,
I'll give the shirt away to someone.
Okay.
But it has to be something really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so
like, you have to be a Liverpool fan in India or something. Do you know what I mean? Someone who's really committed.
Mate, postage and packaging is going to be pretty expensive.
Well, that's not my
anyway,
problem,
so,
mate.
Anyway, so you have it. If you tweet Lawrence something really special, I'm sure he'll make a tweet about it later, then you'll get a free sort of like Liverpool New Balance t-shirt.
You get a free launch kit. Let's put it this way. You're not going to get a free Liverpool shirt, but you'll get a free Liverpool shirt, all right? Dave, just before we move on, are you looking forward, guys, to your new kits? I mean, Adam, your new kit gets launched on the 15th.
It makes me quite excited for the new season.
Harry Kane's
early.
Also
it's a
the
bit
new
early
face.
Though.
Well, I'm wearing a new kit for next season.
Yeah, but it feels a little bit premature. It's like, okay, they haven't finished this season yet. You know, when the summer, the football's died down for a month, bring out the new kit, get me hyped up for the new season. It's a bit premature, I think.
I don't know, mate. The problem for me is that
blowing the load, do you know what I mean?
Liverpool needs some New Balance to their kit.
This is
what New Balance have bought. And not only that, but Liverpool are already looking forward to the new season. The only thing that's keeping Liverpool's foot in this season is Steven Gerrard, right? That's the only thing that's keeping Liverpool fans interested in this season.
So listen, that was Lawrence's talking point. I'm sure that was thrilling listening to the rustling and stuff. I hope it came across well.
I don't know. I was just trying to get a bit more tactile.
Yeah, I felt the rustling.
And then Dave's obviously got a new sponsor for his kit next season, which is
Adidas. It's going to be a good kit, I reckon.
Was that the kit that United won the first Premier League in? An Adidas kit?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, back to the 80s style, I think it is. It'll be pretty cool.
This is going to be. I mean, that's going to be interesting. See United in. I think I've seen the kit leaked.
Ooh,
it looks
good.
Looks all right. Like, yeah, it looks nice.
The away kit looks quite nice. There's a black one that
yes.
looks very good.
A black away kit is a good
We've
away.
Got to move on to Dave's second point, unfortunately. We're going to go over an hour.
Sorry,
it's going to be the longest front free ever. Dave wants to talk about the MSN Messenger, right?
What?
The old
so
chat service.
As we're called the front free, I thought we talk about the greatest ever front three.
So
are you suggesting Suarez, Messi and Neymar are potentially one of the best front threes of all time? Is that what you're saying?
I think they could be the best ever, which is absolutely crazy.
Okay, give me some stats about them then.
So this season they have scored 100 and shit. Hold on.
We're leaving that in.
114 goals this season, I think.
That's what we're calling
100
the podcast.
100
shit. Oh, damn.
How many goals are there? She's good.
I think it's 114. I'm just a bit scared. I don't know. I think I've worked this out before the Champions League game. And obviously, Neymar scored another 2 goals. That is correct. So,
100 and shit. Oh, shit.
Sorry, I like that.
100 and shit.
How many have they scored?
So that is it, yeah, 114. Neymar scored 37 goals this season in 74 out of 84 of the last seasons for Barcelona. He would have been Barcelona top scorer, but obviously Lionel Messi is stopping that.
Is everyone else just replacing the numbers with the word shit?
Yeah, in their heads, yeah.
Neymar scored shit this season, and Suarez has been shit alongside him.
So pure number crunching, is that what you're saying? These numbers are so good.
I think it's got it all. You know, they got a proper number 9 in Luis Suarez, who can press, who can carry, who's brilliant on the ball, can score headers, can score from any sort of angle. They've got Neymar, who's a very, very good, you know, old school sort of winger, going in, going out, got great feet. And then Lionel Messi, the creator in chief, the goal scorer, the pretty much everything, the passer, you know, it's a brilliant combination of three players.
Let me put it this way, if they win the treble, if they do win the treble, I think that will cement their position as one of the greatest front threes.
Yeah.
If they can do it again next season, then bring trophies, then, you know, then we're really talking.
Which I think
they bring
will.
Up some other sort of front threes that we've seen during the recent eras. Yeah. So Ronaldo, Rooney, Tevez, we mentioned them. Not even last week, but they were pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Going on to even Barcelona's front three, he's talking Ronaldinho, Eto'o and Messi. That was something else. But perhaps the ultimate, Rivaldo, Ronaldinho and, you know, the Ronaldo, the classic Ronaldo, as a front three. What do you reckon?
That's a little Brazilian front line. Do you know what I like about this front line is it's all South American, but they are all from different countries. That's what I think I love about it. Mm. There's a different kind of scintillating from this front three, aren't there?
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something I love about the way Luis Suarez plays. He just looks like he has a lust for the game. And Dave is a United fan, will not give a... You know, you'll think it's shit, essentially. But
I think
it's 90
since
shit.
Since he's joined Barcelona, I can finally appreciate the player. You know, he's a very, very, very talented individual.
And then, but I mean, even the FIFA goal they scored, you do have to... I mean,
the vision for Suarez was brilliant.
The interesting thing is, to score a FIFA goal on FIFA can sometimes be tricky. To score a FIFA goal in real life takes some real movement.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's true.
That back line look so stupid. Because on FIFA goal, the frustrating thing about FIFA goal is that you've been outdone because your movement's been bad.
Yeah.
When you've got thinking, real life human beings who have been outthought, then you're really dumb.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Really dumb, yeah.
That's impressive.
There you have it, guys. Let me.
What's your talking point?
Oh, I'm going to get onto it. I'm just going to say if people think they are the best front three of all time, tweet in.
I'll give one more shout out to one front three. It's got to be the Villa Messi Pedro combination in 2010-11.
It's all Barcelona front threes.
At the moment, that is for me the best front three ever because Messi was so good that year. He scored 53 goals. It was absolutely incredible.
I'm going to go Riera, Torres, Babel.
Oh,
what
Ryan
a front three,
Babel.
Mate. Yeah, Babel.
Now we're talking.
Babel. Can I ask? Yeah. Could you just tweet in your favourite trios in football? Yeah, I don't want the best front threes. Okay. I just want the best trios. I want Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets.
Oh,
I want
good.
Alonso, Gerrard, Sissoko. I want Mascherano. I want the midfield of Pirlo, Van
Marquisio.
Yeah, I mean, you could go for an Italian midfield, or go for an old Dutch midfield of. I mean, you know,
De Jong, Van Bommel and Wesley Sneijder.
But even look at the De Boer brothers. Well, I mean, they played in a 4-4-2, which makes it difficult. But I mean,
tweet us in. Give us some shouts.
I'm just giving you some options. But if you've got some local ones that you think we've overlooked, I'd just love to hear your trios.
BBC is obviously another one. Last season was brilliant.
Yeah.
But this season, not so.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit. Am I talking about just briefly because we are over the hour mark there? It's the longest front three ever.
That's fine.
I want to talk a little bit about Steven Gerrard because we might not get another chance.
We will.
Well, I don't know.
He's got another couple of weeks, mate.
Yeah, I know, but you know, whatever. So I want to talk about Gerrard. Obviously, he did a press conference today about him leaving. He's going to LA Galaxy. Yeah, he's going to LA Galaxy for 18 months, the contract is.
Looks that way.
It looks like he's probably going to come back afterwards. But I just want to talk about it. So this whole exit thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it's been a little bit messy.
Why?
he might have left a little bit earlier than he wanted to, I think. But so he alluded to today. He alluded to today that it, basically him leaving became earlier than he thought it would. I think he thought he'd get at least another season.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, he wasn't offered a new contract,
mm-hmm.
and therefore he made the decision to go to LA Galaxy mid-season. He said if he'd have been offered a new contract, he would have stayed.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is, do you guys think this is the right time for him to leave, basically?
Absolutely.
Do you think it's been handled well by the club and by Brendan Rodgers?
Mm-hmm. I don't know how Rodgers could have handled it differently. I think Rodgers has always been respectful towards Gerrard, publicly at least. Mm. And the other day, I've listened to a few podcasts where people have kind of been questioning what Gerrard said about, you know, Mourinho being the best coach of all time, etc. Today in the press conference, he said, you know, I'm urging Raheem Sterling to stay because he's under a great man manager, those kind of things.
Yeah. He said he wished he'd played for under Rodgers in his peak, didn't he, as well? That was one of the quotes that came out.
But that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Is that Gerrard now has to accept the aging process. And he also has to accept that if he built this team up more and if Liverpool had the success when he'd been at his peak, maybe Gerrard wouldn't be in this position we had to leave now. And there was that picture tweeted out, even by Full Time Devils last week, like a great YouTube channel. Great for banter.
Unbelievable.
But this is what I'm saying is, they tweeted out that Paul Scholes left at his peak. United won the title that season. They've got a wonderful photo of him next to Sir Alex. And he got the perfect send-off. But that was because Paul Scholes was surrounded by players that helped him win the title, right?
I think Paul Scholes evolved through his career. He was a striker.
But that's exactly what I'm saying, Dave.
What my point here is that the problem why Gerrard has gone now is because he hasn't fully evolved to what he should be right now.
But the problem is that what should Gerrard now be?
It should be a deep-lying playmaker like a la Paul Scholes at the end of his career, a la Pirlo right now. That's what he should be.
But this is my point, Dave. He's not a playmaker for Liverpool. And that's the problem, is he's at Liverpool now when Liverpool do not require a deep-lying playmaker.
Maybe that's it then.
Another team do. And that's the problem, is that that's why he says he wants Rodgers at his peak, is because at his peak he'd have been playing forward for Rodgers.
Yeah, well, he would have been probably playing the central midfield
Coutinho
role.
Or the Henderson role, essentially. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, is that if now Gerrard has to leave, it's not to do with disrespect or anything. He just doesn't fit the system. And that's not disrespectful. As a Liverpool captain, you'll understand that, and you'll understand where the team's going. The problem is people are looking for narrative from outside.
No, I'd say it's difficult to manage players of that stature almost more than the club. So it's difficult to manage that sort of thing, because obviously he's in a natural decline, and you can't play him every week.
But that's the problem, Adam, is that we're looking at a natural decline.
Exactly.
But Dave says, it's a transitional thing. Mm-hmm. Scholes, you'd argue, could probably still play a role for United.
Exactly.
There's no mention of decline there. And that's the problem, is that Liverpool don't need that player. And Liverpool, and therefore the press are saying, oh, you're not good enough. It's nothing to do with not being good enough.
You could also argue Ryan Giggs, he entered a natural decline, but he was managed in a way that he still played a part. They didn't need him, you could argue. They didn't need Ryan Giggs in those later years. But he was managed, and he made the appearances, and he sort of...
Champions League 11-12, Giggs was in central midfield, and that's what Ferguson did very well, was transition these older players from wide or from attacking.
That's what I'm saying.
To central
Brendan
midfield.
Brendan Rodgers, you could argue... Is Brendan Rodgers not culpable in some way because he's playing him in a role that's not suited to him?
You're looking for fault where there is none. What you're trying to say is, and you also have to understand here, what Liverpool have is FSG, who will always be trying to trim the wage bill, right? And that's what they're going to get rid of, a huge amount of wage excess this summer. Steven Gerrard, Glenn Johnson, other players in there who are earning big whack, right?
Yeah, of course.
You get rid of that, you get rid of £10 million of expenditure a year. That gives you £10 million.
But I'm talking a more romantic... Do you not think they should have managed it in a way that... We're not talking about getting his wage off the bill. We're saying manage him in a way that allowed him to be a one-club man at Liverpool for the end of his career, transition him like Giggs into the coaching roles. He's never going to have played for another club. It's a much more romantic story. I appreciate, the realities of wages, blah, blah, all this sort of stuff. Keep Steven Gerrard.
Why didn't they try
and
centre half this season in the back three? I would have
loved to see him in that, but that's part of the problem is that...
So that's what I'm saying. Should they have not tried something a little bit different? Did they not make
try
a mistake
hard enough.
I think
that they didn't show him their love?
As a captain of the club and to be able... And, it's wonderful to be able to say you played for one club for your entire career. It's also good to say, I bowed out when I knew I needed to go. And it's nothing, some people
see
that side of it. But the problem is that people are looking for a fault, and they're looking for a political problem at Liverpool that Brendan Rodgers is hard to work with, or anyone who works with young men.
I'm not necessarily looking for a fault.
But it does. The way you phrased the question was, could Brendan Rodgers have done this?
And
you
what think, I'm saying is,
you know what, he probably could have.
Yeah, it hasn't been handled. You cannot say it's been handled perfectly, and you'd argue there have been mistakes.
But you know what I would also say?
Where were those mistakes made?
Well, I would say a huge amount of that is journalists baying for blood.
Potentially, they're looking for. You got to look for stories. You got to look for drama. You got to look for the soap opera.
But there's people who want. There's not. They don't want Liverpool to slip up. Mm. You know, I mean, I don't know that many journalists who really want to see people.
Great phrase there, mate.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the point, is that actually, you know, there are people who revel and get a huge amount of headlines from people slipping up.
My final point about Gerrard would be, how do you view his career? So I feel like since that slip last year, there has been this perception of his career that's almost, I don't want to say tragic, because it's not tragic, but there's this almost slightly sad perception of his career that it's not been fulfilled as much as it could have been. He didn't win as much as he could. Maybe he should have gone to Chelsea back in 2005.
Element. What you can't do then is you cannot say to me, you can't 1 minute say it would be amazing. Have a man who's been at Liverpool for years.
Yeah, me personally, I would have loved
and
to.
And romanticise.
Yeah, but that, what,
and then in the same breath, say to me, should he have gone to Chelsea?
No, I'm not saying he should have gone. I'm just saying this is what people are saying. This is what some people are bringing up. What I'm trying to say is they're viewing his career in an almost negative way.
But that's what I'm
saying.
This
perception we're getting for the last year. I'm saying to you, is that unfair?
Okay, so this is going
to
sound incredibly defensive in a sense.
On the back foot, mate.
Because actually it's sometimes...
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, but what I would say to that is, if you're looking for a creative headline, mm-hmm. then this is the perfect time for it. You want to build your narrative. You want to see you want to put in inverted commas the decline of Steven Gerrard. Mourinho made the point perfectly this season to do with Wenger or to do with himself. You can pick whatever headline you want and make it fit. Mm-hmm. And that's what people want to do. The Liverpool Echo will make a romantic headline fit with Gerrard leaving.
Yeah.
The Sun will find another headline to make that fit. Everyone will have their 10 cents or whatever.
Yeah,
but ultimately what's important for Liverpool is how Liverpool transition and where Steven Gerrard goes after that and when he comes back to the club.
Yeah.
If Steven Gerrard returns triumphantly in a few years' time, people forget those headlines of a few years ago.
Yeah, okay.
And the naysayers, or the people who are always looking for a creative headline, which is to sell them papers, is not going to have the same. Now, put it this way. If United had been under David Moyes when Paul Scholes was bowing out, they would have questioned David Moyes and whether he played him right.
Mm.
And there were people who were questioning David Moyes and all those different things mm-hmm. at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they questioned why they got rid of Ferdinand, Vidic, Evra.
All those kind of things. People were always looking for a problem with him, right? And, you know, he took a lot of flack. He wasn't great, but he still took a lot of flack. And it's the same with Louis van Gaal earlier in the season. Why isn't he playing this? Why isn't he playing that? Have those headlines been forgotten now, Dave?
But I always asked that under Ferguson. That was the thing. I think that's what... you know, I would always question a manager, always question Ferguson, made so many questionable decisions. But that's what you've got to do as a football fan. But like you're saying, it's got to be the correct headline. I think
you have to be critical in the right way.
Yeah, exactly. Steven Gerrard has had a fantastic career. He's probably put one of the best man-of-the-match performances ever in a Champions League final. That's what I will remember Steven Gerrard
for. Would you say
that's
part of the problem with Steven Gerrard, is that man-of-the-match performance takes away from the overall team performance? And that when Steven Gerrard plays for Liverpool, it's more about Steven Gerrard than it is... Maybe that's the outside.
Maybe that's not the correct point. Maybe you'd say that he rescued them so many times in that tournament. You look at the goal against Olympiacos that, you know, we all know the thunderbolt from like 30 yards. Then in the final again,
but
you know,
look at Luis Garcia scoring that amazing looping shot over over Buffon. I mean, you know,
great player. Going to admit it right now, he's a great player, but he didn't win the Premier League, unlike Luke Chadwick.
But that's part of it, isn't it? Steven Gerrard didn't win the Premier League.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So do we view his career unfairly? Because, you know, we got to look at all the other great stuff, like you're saying, you're talking about Champions League.
No, we view it completely fairly. But that's what I'm saying, is we have to come up with a definitive headline of, is it fair or unfair? Is it good or bad?
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? It's a great achievement to stay at a club that long. It's a great achievement to play in all those positions. It's a great achievement
to have synced with all those
managers.
Alan Shearer is revered as a legend of the game. He won nothing at Newcastle.
But he did win the Premier League title.
Yeah, but he never won the Champions League.
No, but you know what? Blackburn were exciting for a little bit of time in Europe.
Yeah. Listen, we've got to wrap up there because we've gone 2 hours and 15 minutes.
What?
We're way over. I'm sorry, 1 hour and 15 minutes.
All right. Jeez.
Yeah, time flies.
Cut that bit out when I meant to stop that start, definitely.
Yeah, that will get us down to what?
Where? So I've been here for 5 hours. So where can the good people find more of your work, Lawrence? Is it at Lostcast on Google?
Not on Google. Go lostcast.com.
Interesting.
It's a website. It'll link you to my Instagram, yeah, my Facebook, all those different
Dave, where can the people find you?
At Squawker Dave.
How do you spell squawker, though? Because I okay, always this is mistype a, this it, Dave.
S-Q-
and I know you're big for misspellings.
U-A.
W. Personal.
Yeah, S-Q-U-A-W-K-A.
K-A.
Squawker.
Squawker.
It's a squawk.
What a brand as well. Squawker really up going up in the world. I like Squawker.
Unbelievable.
Big fan of Squawker. Great tweets. Great app.
Top lads.
Yeah, I tried out the app the other day, Dave.
Did you enjoy it?
Really impressed.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks. No, genuinely. I don't use many football apps. This was a great app.
Top app.
Go and download Squawker, guys. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. We're going to be back next Wednesday with episode 5, so tune in then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.